Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Modern Mind with today's guest, George Heaton, co-founder of Represent Clothing and a walking embodiment of everything the brand stands for. Discipline, hard work, high standards, focus, attention to detail, and everything in between. These are the things that you can expect when you engage with George on social media, and these are the things that Represent stands for. In today's conversation, we explore everything that's gone into building the business over the past 12 years, the growth, the challenges, the difficulties along the way, and the lessons learned from an individual and a business perspective. George and his brother Michael saw stratospheric growth as of the year 2019, but there's been some real key focus points along the way. This year, the business is scheduled to turn over £80 million, so it's fast becoming one of the best-known fashion-focused brands in the UK, and their 247 range is really starting to make a mark in the fitness market as well. I absolutely love the brand. Anyone that watches me on YouTube or sees clips of this podcast or full episodes of this podcast, you'll see that I'm in rep most of the time. And that is because I love the high quality. I love the simplicity. I love the subtle stylishness of it. And I'm just really bought in. I love everything it stands for. And it was a real privilege to sit down and have this conversation with George. We discuss a wide range of things, from his upbringing, the reason that he decided to go into business in the first place, the lessons learned along the way from an individual and a business perspective, and what the future looks like. George himself admits that the George you see online now is very different to the George you'll have seen previously, and we really dive into the journey that he has been on. In short, expect to be inspired, expect to reconsider your priorities, and expect to really ask yourself whether you're going all in. But before we hear from the man himself, it is important to go through a little bit of housekeeping, if you don't mind. If you haven't yet done so, please share this episode or an episode previously with a friend, as it is the fastest way for the show to continue to grow. Alongside that, if you haven't yet rated or reviewed the show on whatever platform you're listening on, please do make sure to do so and hit the follow and or subscribe button on whatever platform you're on. Check us out on YouTube, sign up to the mailing list, check us out on socials. I massively appreciate all of you, and if you do all of those things, you'll be an absolute legend. Thank you very much. I've got a big old smile on my face right now. Cheers. It's also important that we mention the show's sponsors, as without them, there would be no show. First up, we have Days Brewing, who provide the best tasting alcohol-free alternatives to your regular lagers and pale ales here in the UK. Brewed in East Lothian, just down the road from me, but sold nationwide, Days provide you with all of the flavour and excitement and ceremony of a beer without any of the negative side effects. I have massively cut down on my alcohol consumption in 2023, and I've seen an enormous upturn in my productivity, my sleep quality, and my overall performance, which means that my recovery is generally better when I'm tracking on things like Whoop in terms of how I feel on a day-to-day basis. And those are all things that are hotly discussed online at the moment. So whatever your focus points, whatever you're training for, whatever you're interested in, simply by reducing your alcohol intake can see massive benefits. If you would like to give Days Brewing a go, or maybe gift them to a friend, then use the code MODERNMIND20 at checkout to save yourself 20% off, and do please let us know how you get on over social media. Next up, we have Man Cave, who are without a doubt the UK's most exciting men's grooming business, with an enormous range of products for you to choose from to leave you looking fantastic, smelling fantastic, and most importantly, feeling fantastic. They're 100% natural, 100% cruelty-free, 100% recyclable, and 100% vegan. And provide everything from massively varied shower gels to shampoo, conditioner, moisturizer, chamois cream, and everything in between. Your bathroom requirements and anti-chafing requirements are covered with Man Cave, and I've been using them for well over a year now, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Let's just say that even when I'm on the road and I know there's going to be reliable toiletries provided, I've still got some Man Cave on my person because I will settle for no less. And neither should you. So if you'd like to give Man Cave a go, use the code FC40 to save yourself 40% off at checkout. And again, do please let us know how you get on over social media. Anyway, without any further ado, it is time to dive into today's episode with Mr. George Heaton. George, how are we doing?
Great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think of Edinburgh? First time up in a while.
Yeah, absolutely love it. We've had an amazing day.
We have. I've firmly said to several people already that I have never, ever experienced the Pennines like that this morning. And I think for you, as somebody who spends a lot of time in the Peak District, I'm quite proud that I've managed to show you the best feature of Edinburgh with nobody else around.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful.
So I grew up in Edinburgh. I love it here. I've spent some time away. I'm back. And I'm back for reasons that are close to me. You grew up in the Northwest. You're still in the Northwest. What was it like growing up there?
As a kid, I didn't like it. I kind of resented it just because myself and my brother were so different to everyone else there. And I didn't really start exploring it until I was a lot older and a lot wiser, and I realized how much of a nice place it actually is and what I can do, like we just mentioned earlier about going up into the mountains and just exploring. So it took me a long while to start to love it, but I do love it now.
Would you be anywhere else?
Yeah, I've got a few things planned. I'm never going to stick around. Like, I go away a lot. Every 2 weeks, I'm usually away somewhere. And I love Los Angeles. I'm sure anyone listening to this who's listened to me before, I talk about it a lot.
So you were different growing up, you and Mike.
Yeah.
Why?
We were just like culturally unfit into the environment. Like, all my friends and everyone in our school were into, it was like tracksuits, shaved heads, TNs. Me and Mike were like, we had this West Coast skate look. We had our long hair, we wore oversized tees, skinny jeans, Vans. We would skate around where we could, even though the concrete doesn't really allow you to where we are. So we had a different outlook on life that didn't match where we grew up, I guess.
When did that outlier existence start to manifest into thinking we're a bit more creative? We've got these thoughts that ultimately became represent, because you started it when you were 19?
I was 19. Way before that, like early teens, Mike was my inspiration, and his inspiration was what he'd find on YouTube, what he'd look at on the TV, like whether it was heavy metal bands or pro skaters. All our inspiration came from that whole setting, and I guess it was like an environment we wanted to be in that we weren't in.
So you created it for yourself, essentially?
Yeah, I guess so.
So the confidence to be able to do that when you got to the age of 19 must have come from somewhere, because obviously you had each other. You had the setting you grew up in. I can imagine it must have been challenging with the tracksuits and the skinheads and you being different and all the things that go with that. But parents growing up, I know your dad's a very hardworking man. You're still very well connected with him. He's still very hardworking, loves what he does. But what influence did your parents have on you to give you the confidence to move towards starting what has ultimately become something rather insane?
Yeah, I think there was two different dynamics from my mum and dad. My dad was like all about the grit, hard work, physical labor. And my mum was a mum who would come and sit on the end of my bed every night and be like, George, you're going to make it. You're going to do really well in life. I don't know what it is you're going to be. You're very creative. Like, I know you're going to do well. So she was kind of like instilling this confidence into my brain that something's going to happen. I was going to do something with my life. Whereas my dad was kind of teaching me the lessons of discipline, the lessons of grit, the lessons of determination, the lessons of actually putting in the work will get you somewhere.
How did the next steps unfold then? Because discipline, grit, hard work are all things that are integral to the lifestyle you lead now, the persona you have online, the brand, the business, and everything from the top down. But at 19 years old, the confidence to be able to go out and actually say, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to make it a business with a supply chain that needs managed. And I'm going to do this with my brother. We're going to go our own way is a bold thing to do. Was it confidence in the idea? Was it a desire to not work for anyone else? Was it total faith in your and Mike's abilities that came from your mom saying you're going to make it? What was the spark that really thought this is what we should do and this is now the time that we should do it?
I can't put a defining factor on it, but I can tell you that like all of them little things all amounted to what it would be. Back then it was, let's just sell t-shirts to our friends and then they'll sell them to their friends and then it'll start rolling. I didn't set out a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan or imagine the business to be at a certain size by then. It was just about how do I get out of this educational system and working for my dad at night? Like, what is the way I can do something different?
What were the early stages like? Because starting a business for those listening might be something they aspire to do. It's intimidating. The longer you wait, in my opinion, the more intimidating it can become because responsibilities grow, mortgages get bigger, interest rates at the moment aren't very friendly, kids come along and you get locked into a way of living that becomes difficult to exit. But you're in a very unique position where you've jumped in straight away before apprenticeships, before grad schemes, before all the things that a lot of people that enter the working world find themselves in.
Yeah.
And you've had to build the wings as you fly. So initial challenges, what were the harshest lessons that you learned fast?
Lessons that I learned fast. Okay. Yeah. Just to like not be so emotionally attached to things. Like even though it is still all my life, like 100% of my energy goes into building the brand one way or another, whether it's through myself, through my brother, through 247. But like back then I was so emotionally attached to how people would conversate and how suppliers would deal with our stuff. And like back then it was more of like my back was constantly against the wall. I didn't have the money. I didn't have the backing. I didn't have any advice from anyone on what to do. So it was every single step, every single idea, every single challenge that came ahead. Like I was shooting in the dark. There was no blueprint. There was no mentor. There was no one to tell me what to do. So I guess I just learned over the years, and it's been a long time. Like this never just all of a sudden blew up. Like it's been 12 years now.
Initial back against the wall situations, no blueprint, and everything that's followed. How did you process that emotionally as the kid that was different to everybody else growing up? Because I know you've spoken openly and you live a very, very disciplined, rigid existence now, which is completely passion-led, and that's completely evident to all. But from a self-doubt, from a trying to prove things to others point of view, did you ever feel that there was a sense of inadequacy, trying to prove things to others, that was moving you forwards when you had your back up against the wall?
Yeah, definitely. Like at the start, it was always, I wanted to prove to my dad that I didn't have to work for him. I wanted to prove to my granddad, like the things that he said was not true and what we could actually become from selling our own art. And then, yeah, it was just like, how do I get better than this guy? How do I, like, you're always comparing yourself, especially at a young age, to other people. And I wanted to be successful in my own right. And I wanted to show my family what I could do. I wanted to provide for my whole family. And I wanted to just be the best version of myself.
The brand's taken off. There's several steps on the ladder to get to the point.
Yeah, it's had a very like...
Some big ones.
it's had a very slow, long and weird curve, but then it kind
of... There's big spikes, aren't there? Yeah. But the thing is, there's always been the spike and then the people have stayed.
Right.
And then 2019, which we'll come on to, was the spike, which went stratospheric.
Yeah.
It's only going one direction now. But early days, by sounds of things, you were making up as you go along. You and Mike were just trying to prove to your granddad and your dad that you could sell t-shirts and that you didn't need to go and refurbish disabled minivans or whatever it is on a day-to-day basis. And there were a few things that happened early doors that were completely unfathomable, really, weren't there? I mean, Justin Bieber's the big example that moved things forward.
Yeah.
And that's not in any blueprint anywhere. That will probably never happen again for any other brand. So do you want to talk us through the sort of key initial moments that really got the brand out there?
Yeah, I mean, like, if I go really far back, the first one was a band called Rizzle Kicks, if you remember those.
Yeah, yeah.
And I met them guys at a little festival in Wales, and I give them some caps and they wore them on the stage, and it was like, okay, sick, there's 400 people watching this. Some of them will buy the brand. We put a little stall up at that, like, event that was on, tie-dyed some t-shirts, sold them around, had the caps there. And that like got our name out a little bit, and then they wore it on TV. And it was like, okay, this is like UK national television and we have absolutely zero capital, so we can't spend to put on there, but our name is on there. So that was like the first step. Then you'd start seeing names come in on the big cartel orders that you didn't know. So it was like, okay, it's not just friends and friends of friends buying this anymore. People are starting to buy it. And over that like course of the first 3-4 years, I was obviously heavily into like Mac Miller's music. He was a massive idol of mine. And he was touring in Manchester. And I felt that was an opportunity for me to represent on him one way or another, if I could get it on him. And I'm not one of them guys that will go and try and do things like that. But I just felt at the time, like my clothes were cool and he's cool and I love his music. Surely he'll love the clothes. And I just sent a message to his manager on Twitter. And I was like, oh, can I pull up to the tour bus and give you these clothes? He's like, yeah, yeah, pull up. Chuck some clothes in the door. Comes on stage in Manchester in the represent stuff. Puts it as his profile picture the next day. And then he was down in London like 2 days later and he was like, oh, Mac wants you to come on the bus. So I was like, okay, sick. So jumped on this bus, met Mac. That was such a cool thing because like then not only is it on national TV in like all over the UK with Rizzle Kicks, then you've got Mac Miller, who's put it as his profile picture on Instagram, which was new at the time, and Twitter. And it says represent across his sweater. So then more people started buying it and we got like a little bit of traction in the US and across Europe. And that kind of snowballed a little bit of like capital into the back where I could actually start doing things that I wanted to do, and it wasn't just a t-shirt and a sweater with Represent across it.
What does Represent actually mean to you?
In the beginning, it didn't really mean anything. It was just a cool word that, like, it was a cool word that I loved, and it looked great when I'd written it out, whether it was a script or whether it was in a font. And I think over the years, like, I fell out of love with it for a while, but then I fell back in love with it. And then I realized, like, I guess it's an abbreviation of us. Like, we're representing ourselves. We're like, Represent is who we are as a brand and as people. And I guess that's what the name means now.
And that's why now, if we fast forward, obviously we'll paint a picture as we go, but everything is so brand, campaign, visual, people, ethos, value led.
Yeah.
So it really feels that the brand from the inside out is being represented outwardly.
Yeah, exactly. And I know, like, the word community gets thrown around a lot, but it's really like such a communal brand, whether it's the team in the headquarters or the customers that love buying it that become friends through it and stuff like that. Like, it's all very communal.
And if we just go back to the Mac Miller situation, the message that really stands out to me there is essentially backing yourself.
Yeah.
Because you did something that a lot of people wouldn't think was even possible to do, which is just have a pop, give it a go, send the message, see what happens. And I think it's more common these days. People know that you can go out there and give things a go, but ultimately business, taking risks, that's what that is all about. And that one risk to just put yourself out there, because there's a lot of pride attached to it. So what if you'd said no?
Exactly.
Yeah. You might have felt horrible. You might have thought, oh, my clothes are terrible. I'm a bad person. Oh, Mac Miller doesn't know. I didn't get through to the person. I backed myself. I thought I would. And that was a risk that you took, but you took it.
Yeah.
And then not only was he wearing your clothes, not only was the name that you'd chosen front and center, but you met somebody cool. You met somebody you admired.
Yeah. And I guess back then, like, when I was, like, I was pretty much a kid then. He was a kid as well. And, like, we had shared interests, and I loved his music. He loved the clothes. That, like, now the age we live in is so different with social media. You can pretty much reach out to anyone, right? And it's not so uncommon to get your clothes on somebody. Or a lot of brands will pay different influencers, artists, whatever it is to... But back then, it was literally the start of that whole social media thing. So it was a lot... I guess it was a lot more difficult to do it, but at the same time, when you did do it, it was very impactful.
And that was stage one of many of these spikes that came along. And then Justin Bieber was the one that... There's been many along the way, but I'd say the next ring in the ladder that has always stood out to me is just the ridiculousness of you guys rolling up to where he was staying and everybody thinking it was him, and it was just you being like, just delivering some clothes, don't worry.
Yeah, that was a crazy day.
What was the situation there? Because again, it was a risk that you took to try and make something happen, and it happened again.
Yeah, well, actually, it was my friends that owned a bar called Tattoo in Manchester, and they invited Bieber there because he was performing that night, and they just opened the restaurant and bar up, and they invited us down just as like guests to fill the bar out whilst he was coming in. It wasn't just full of random people that would ask Bieber for pictures. And we were just at the bar, and obviously we're all head to toe in rap. Like, the full crew was out, six of us or something at that time. And he walked in and he was like, what hat is that you're wearing? I'm like, what's this? And then James, the guy who works for me, was like, I'll take my number, gave it to the security guard. They exchanged a few things. And then the next minute we're pulling up at his house with a boot full of clothes, and he wore it for the rest of the tour.
It's absolutely mad to think, isn't it? Because from that point onwards, that's been a real core part of the brand DNA. And the collaborative side of that has become one of the most exciting things about what you do. And from a design point of view, how creatively fulfilling was it when those relationships with Mac Miller, with Justin Bieber, started to become things that you could actually build in collaboration with them? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but Mike's a bit more of the back end design, deep thinker, profound thinker. You're a bit more of the front end, living a lifestyle, representing the brand, but very much focusing on product and bringing the product to life.
Right.
So when it comes to, most recently, Motley Crue, you've done a collaboration with Motley Crue. Sick. Not many people have done that, if anyone else. So it's a case of when you started getting the opportunity, how did that personally feel from a reward point of view? Did you actually get a chance to look back and think, this is unbelievable that we are working with people like this and we're actually not doing things the way that anybody else is? From a creative fulfillment point of view.
Yeah, 100%. It felt great. And it feels great that, like, people of that date status and that amount of wealth will wear represent over brands they can be paid millions for, or brands that are really expensive. Like if Bieber can go in his closet and choose represent over Prada, Gucci, Dior, all these other brands that will happily pay him to wear it, like that's the best feeling, to know that you're on them guys or them girls and they're choosing to wear it. And still to this day, when a celebrity will pop up and wear it, or like someone of high influence, or just like podcasters, whoever it is that I'll be watching on TV, and it'll be like, oh shit, they're wearing rap. Like they're choosing to do that. That's the best feeling for me. I feel like I'm doing something right when that happens.
Has that feeling always been as intense now as it has been from the start?
Yeah, definitely. Still feel like Nas wore it on stage whilst he sang Represent last week. And it's like, that's one of them moments where you kind of dream that happens, and then it happens. It's like, whoa, that's
completely
actually
organic.
Really cool.
Just had the clothes, didn't know, saw him on stage. Yeah, amazing, amazing. So we spoke earlier on the Hills about there was a point 2018, 2019, just before the brand started to go insane, where you actually didn't feel like you were that happy with who you are as a person.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's a lot that's happened to make you the person that everybody sees online now, and the front runner for the brand, and essentially what 247 is all about when it comes to the lifestyle side of things, is living a 24/7 lifestyle. And do you want to just talk us through the years in between Rizzle Kicks and the point where you decided something had to change from a personal point of view? Because you've got a lot on your shoulders. As you said, you're a kid. You've got these crazy opportunities, and the stress of crazy opportunities, whether good or bad, is still stress. It's still something you've got to process, isn't it? You've got to manage that with the people around you. So who would you become when you decided that you needed to make a change, and what happened along the way to make you think, oh, it's time to move on?
I guess I had this like gradual incline of like wealth, the brand getting bigger, everyone like finding out about the brand and it becoming a thing. But I wasn't going at that same rate with my mental health or my ability to actually be a businessman or my ability to lead a team or anything like that. Like I wasn't self-developing, but the brand was growing at like a good incline. It wasn't growing crazy. If it would have grown crazy, it would have been come straight falling back down, but it grew to a point where I could still handle it. But it, like you said, in 2018, 19, a trigger happened where like I'd like for the few years before that, there was like times where we were out every weekend. We were getting drunk 3 times a week. We were like having bad relationships. The business wasn't running well. Like we weren't focusing our efforts in the right places because we thought like, okay, it's great. It's doing well. Like this is cool. Like we kind of took a backseat on the right things, which was such a bad mistake. But I'm glad that all that happened because I learned from it so much, because it got to a point where it was like, it's either make or break. We are either doing this now or it's going to crash. And it got so deep into that point, like my friends who had been in the business from the start, some of them left, with the team size went down so small, the revenue dropped, my profits dropped. And then like, I was so caught up in other things that I didn't realize it was happening. So when it kind of got to this point where like a realization, I was just sat on my own for a while, and I realized that like I didn't know who I was personally, and how I looked and everything like that just wasn't what I wanted to be. So I kind of just drew a picture of what I wanted to become, who I wanted to become, where I'll see myself in the next 10 years. And I know it sounds cliche, but I actually the way I communicate things to myself is by drawing it out. Or I'll use my notes, like I draw everything and I scribble things. So I just kind of like pictured myself as this guy that I actually wanted to be, not who I was then. And I had to really dig deep on like self-development. I had to read a lot of books. I had to learn a lot about business whilst I was trying to turn the business back over into something that was once again successful. And through doing that, I guess I leaned into it so much that it became my passion again. Whereas I'd lost it for the past few years. Like I said, we'd put it all on a backseat. We'd taken all these different trips around the world, doing fun stuff, making it look cool, but behind the scenes, it wasn't cool.
And you were doing things for other people in many ways, weren't you? Because I know you've gone through the wheelhouse of trying the fast cars,
doing all the bad things that come with being a young guy with money to play with.
Definitely.
And it's out of your system now, but along the way you'll have learned some valuable lessons that make you a more informed version of who you are. And ultimately when you went to scribble down in your notes, who do I want to be? You had that information to go with it. So the self-development piece that you were accidentally working through figuring out the business, just because people like the perceivable jumps from a business perspective, what were the things that got you as a brand from 5 figures to 6 figures a month? And then beyond that, what were the things that got you from 6 to 7?
I don't know. That was like really at the start, going from like 5 to 7 figures was quite early on. And that was just about product offering and having the stock to be able to do it. And then obviously Facebook ads came along, Instagram like appeared and everyone started using that. So the actual ascent from like 6 to 7 figures was really easy.
Which makes the lessons learned
not even seem like lessons, because they weren't really there.
You almost got a fast pass, which means that you didn't have the ability to see how you got there to then apply it to the next stage in many ways, didn't you?
Right.
Which is almost why you found yourself in that position, yeah.
Yeah, and 2016 to 2019, we were stuck. Like the revenue was flat. The business was flat. Like we'd grown through the first 5-6 years of the brand, and then we just flattened off, and I couldn't figure out, because I didn't understand what I actually needed to do for all that time, how we would get to the next step, or if there even was a next step. Like I didn't know like where we could grow with the business. I thought we was doing the right things and making the right decisions, and it just wasn't true.
Was your identity directly correlated with the performance of the business in that period?
Yeah, 100%.
Is it still now?
No, the brand is way bigger than what I am. Like I'm just a tool to help it grow, I guess.
So 2019, things changed.
Yeah.
Aggressively.
Yeah.
It's fair to say. What was the period of time where you started to get the feeling that things were going, and then the trajectory has just gone year on year from that point? Correct me if I'm wrong, but financial year forecast this year, as you've said recently, is 80 million we're looking at. And 2019 was at 7 in that year. So between now and then, the trajectory has been insane. And it took you from, best part, 7 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, there was like I said, there was a breaking point where it was like, we either do this or we don't. Me, Mike, James, Steph, the boys that are still in the business now, sat down and we were like, we mapped out a whole new plan. And we spent the back end of 2018 and half of 2019 just really like changing everything. So it was like down to suppliers, down to fabrics, down to the shows we were showing at, down to cutting off, like doing runways, down to changing our wholesale platform, down to going to direct to consumer only for a while. And these were all things that were risks, right? But there were risks that we had to take, because if we didn't take them, we would stay flat. Like we were manufacturing everything in the UK till 2018, where the suppliers couldn't handle the production that we'd want to do if we wanted to double our revenue. And the price points for the product that we were making, we were losing money at wholesale anyway. So why, like, we were doing it wrong. Like everything, even though it says made in Britain, it wasn't great. Like the production value you get out of Britain is nowhere near what you can get in other countries. And even though the whole made in Britain essence, and I'm sure it's the same made in the USA, it's nowhere near as fast forward and well executed as countries that are really leveraging production to actually become huge economies based on that.
Did you make the decision to change based on the few scenarios where the actual product that went out to market wasn't what you hoped it would be?
Yeah, the product wasn't great. The product was taking too long to make. And the work that was put into every single product was way too much for what it should have been. Like we wanted to do vintage wash hoodies. We would have to go and get the fabric from one mill, drive it to a production house that had stitched it up, then drive it to a wash house that had dye it. But then it'd shrink. So then you'd have to then resize it for a different label. Then it'd go to another place to get printed. They'd charge you extra to put it in a bag. Then it comes to your warehouse. And like the whole cycle of that adds up, that you don't realize like every single 50p or pound or whatever it is, just transport cost and labeling costs and bagging costs, adds so much onto it that then when you're going out to a wholesale partner and they're asking for discount and you're like, okay, yeah, take 10% discount on this if you're going to order X amount, you're making zero money. And we just didn't realize that for so many years.
There was round of jackets that went out, weren't there, that you had to almost recall and apologize
for? That was a long time ago.
was that before then?
Yeah.
Before the decision. So you had that lesson.
Had that lesson
still stuck
many
with
times.
The British made,
yeah,
for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So was it just that 2019 overhaul as a business where you took the decision, enough's enough, we're moving elsewhere, and then the journey to make that happen began?
Yeah. So we spent like a lot of time in Portugal, and it was a completely different system to how we were manufacturing. So usually I'd have pattern cutters in-house that would make samples, and then we'd take it down to the factory in Birmingham. We'd refit it, we'd redo it in an actual fabric, mock it up, see how it does. That would take so long because there's so much physical effort in it. And James, who's now the chief product officer, was like, let's just try Portugal. Everyone says it's the best thing. Everyone says we need to do our jersey there. We need to do our pants there. And I had so many bad like arguments with him, and we were so immature at the time. And I just didn't believe it was right. Like, I didn't believe it was the right thing that actually everything can be done off measurements and prototypes, not all made by hand in the office, which is how I originally loved it. But we knocked that on the head, and that was such a long process. That was like nearly a year of us not having stock because we don't want to do the English stuff. And we're trying this Portuguese stuff that's taking so long. We're trying to figure out all these factories. They don't want to work with us because we're so small. They don't know who we are because we've just come into the country. It's like you're in this battle, and eventually you get out of this battle where you can order a lot more. All the other factories start talking about you. Then they all want you. Then you've got the leverage on all of them. And now it's like every single factory in Portugal wants to work with Represent. So they're all fighting for it. They're all giving us the best product possible. And we've got amazing partners now. And that wouldn't have happened if James wouldn't have come to me and said, look, let's try this.
So along the way, team members have been an enormous part of the whole process. James obviously figured that out along the way. You and Mike have been the team the whole way through. You've been the core. What point did you relinquish top-end control and bring in a CEO? And when did you start to actually be a bit more tactical and strategic about board-level discussions, senior leadership team? Because up until 2019, you were a team of six or seven, weren't you?
Yeah, I think we dropped back down to eight just before COVID.
Wow.
And that was, again, that was about streamlining the business so we could actually do other things. We focused on our online. We knew we had a lot of customers there. They just weren't buying from us because we weren't doing the right things. We were trying to be a different brand. We were trying to do runways. We were trying to be technical, trying to do too many things, listening to too many people in the wrong areas. So yeah, we came back to our roots, started putting things online. COVID happened. We were like, okay, most factories are shut down here. Let's find the ones that are still working and let's get product in from them that we can do pretty easily. Easy t-shirts. Mike can do amazing graphics. Let's put some graphics on these tees. Let's imitate the vintage rock tees. And we put some online on like a Friday and they sold out. And then we did next Friday and they sold out. And then we doubled it next Friday and they sold out. And then it became this thing where we were all just like, something here is actually like really catching on. And we did like a series of 10 tees originally for the first 10 weeks of COVID. And then we restocked them all and it just blew up the website and was like, right, we're onto something here. Their eyes are on us. Everyone's getting these orders next day in the middle of COVID because our warehouse is still working. And everyone's tagging it on Instagram. There's so many eyes on the brand. Now we can actually like rebuild what the brand's DNA is and start really designing some really cool product. And that there was the turning point where the brand exploded. And that was, luckily, that was like a year into COVID. So I had a year of just being able to clear my mind, listen to podcasts, read books, talk to Mike all day. Didn't have the stress of business, didn't have the stress of like a huge team on my shoulders and me trying to navigate through things without knowing what I'm doing. There was no fashion weeks on, so we couldn't even do a fashion show. So we knocked that on the head. Stores were all canceling their orders with other brands. So it was like, okay, we don't need to do wholesale. Let's just leave it for a while. Built the brand through them 2 years or so. Got it to such a huge level from where it was that we looked back and was like, right, stores are opening up now. All the factories are reopening. Everyone's coming to us. Every single store in every single country wants Represent. Whereas back before that, it was like, oh, will you take Represent on? like, okay, we'll give you this order, but we want this discount and we're only going to pay you in 90 days. Whereas now it's like, we've got the leverage. So they're coming to us, they're desperate for represent, they're selling out of the product. Okay, so now we can increase our global, I say lighthouse, because all these stores are lighthouses for us. They'll all get a select amount of products. We'll put it in there. People will go in, look at it and be like, oh shit, this is amazing product and it's good price. Like, let me go on the website. They'll come on the website, see such a big collection and see the prestige system, get involved with the community, they see the Facebook groups and the Instagram accounts. And that's where we're at now. We're just at this place where everyone wants represent and we're making the right product.
And at the core of all that, throughout that process you've just run through, was your personal transformation, the decisions you made, the person you wanted to be, the notes that you took. Just talk us through that from a fitness point of view, because I know you've gone through your own, as I have, evolution of fitness over the years. We've both been out of breath meatheads at points in our life. And at certain points today, we were out of breath meatheads yet again.
Yeah.
But we've had fun today, and we were dynamic in several ways, might I add.
A lot of stuff.
So I think...
Fastest 5K. Yeah.
So what actions did you take? Because you mentioned the person you want to be conceptually, but what actually happened? What was the action you took next? Because I think, to give it context, you have reinvented a brand that was doing well, hit a dip. You took a conscious decision, right, let's fucking change this.
Yeah. Reinvent everything. Myself, my physical, my personal, my brother, my team, and my brand. If we can reinvent everything and put it up to a level of where we're way more satisfied with it, then we can start expressing ourselves more. Like, I hated being behind a camera way, like, before that. I didn't like pictures getting taken. We'd edit stuff all the time. And then when I decided, right, like, I want to look like this, then I went and did it. Spent so much time running, so much time lifting, so much time figuring out different programs that I could use, so much time looking at nutrition and diets. Like, and again, this was like 2019, 2020, 2021. And I saw the change in my body and like my physique and my mental clarity, and I stopped drinking and I just changed my whole way of living to this more disciplined person that would, it was business first, then it was, well, no, I'd say business, family, fitness, all three at the same time, but everything correlated to business. And if I can put everything into that business, which is family and fitness anyway, then that was kind of like where 247 came about.
And that was a key moment along the way, wasn't it? Because we were up in the Bentleys today discussing the moment where, one, you actually found a love for running, because we were up and had a cloud inversion up in the hills. It was, as I've said, it was stunning. Unlike anything I've ever had local to Edinburgh in my life. And I've been here a long time. So talk us through that moment, because you were running around a reservoir close to you.
Yeah.
And an idea formed, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I was with Mike, my brother, and we were running up in the hills, lovely, like, it was so hot in that 2020 summer. And I was like, why am I wearing a Nike pant? Why are you not wearing a represent pant? Like, what are we missing here? Like, the whole mission was always to create the wardrobe for ourselves. And now we're getting into fitness. There's nothing that is represent that will work for this. So, like, we went back to the office that night and I kind of wrote up a little plan of, like, all these different aspects of different pants that I like that I want to put into a represent pant. And it was like, okay, I love the fit of this Nike pant. I love the fabric of this Lululemon pant. I love the military pocket on our best-selling pant. I love the way the finishing is on this pant, because I have to tuck this other Nike pant into my socks. So let's put this finishing on it. Drew this pant out on a piece of paper on a board. And we just thought, like, right, let's try it. Let's figure out the fabric. Sent it to the factory in Birmingham again and ordered 300 of them, I think it was, for the first order. And made a little campaign video that I thought was nothing really. It was just us going out, going for a run, coming to the office, going to the gym, getting back home at night. But throughout that video, with each different dynamic of life, we were in the same pant and it just exploded. The video exploded, the pants sold out in a second. We tripled the order, the pants sold out in a second. We then moved the order to a much more technical factory in the Far East because we had some issues with the first ones and production quantities. And we ordered just so much that could last us 6 months at the rate that it was selling at. And that's when we realized, we can sell way more products than what we're doing, because we're selling things out and then the demand is still there, but we're not supplying the demand. So that was the first product that allowed us to supply demand.
And it's your hero product now, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It sells every day. It's our bread and butter. And
is that across both businesses, Represent and both businesses, both strands of the business, rather? It's bestseller.
That and like an owner's club hoodie in black is our best-selling pieces.
So 247 essentially represents that transformation you went through and the action you take, the reinvention and the habits that got you to the point where you had this moment of clarity. For anyone listening that's thinking, I'd love to be able to reinvent myself. I'd love to be able to overhaul my life and have that clarity, find that clarity. What would you recommend that they do? What were the processes that you went through? Who were the people that influenced you? What were the things that influenced you? What were the habits that you focused on to start that process of transformation?
All right. Well, there was a few different catalysts. One was Andy Fritzella, 75 Hard. I found out about this through a friend and it seemed like the right thing to do at the time for me. I was already running. I was already training. I was already in this like business mindset of just working on my goals. And that there, the little aspects that are inside of that, the training twice a day, the drinking X amount of water, the no alcohol, the sticking to a diet, these were like little disciplines that I could just add into my life that would then give me more time to do what I wanted to do and less time to think about them other things that then I've got to cut out. There was no alcohol, so that meant I'm not going out. Right. There was sticking to a diet, so that meant I'm not going out for dinner either. Then there was like training twice a day. So I've got to wake up early. I've got to then train after I've finished my work as well. So all these little things I just put into my life that for me, the 75 hard thing wasn't difficult because I was already like 80% of the way there. It just made me realize that if I go 100% rather than 80%, I can do so much more with my day, with my life. I can become such a better person. And I did that a couple of times and through his podcast, I started listening to other people. Then there was a guy called Ed Milet that has such like a optimistic way of looking at life. So I thought like, why am I always pessimistic about everything? Why do I never believe in anything that I do? Like switch that, let's change that. Let's wake up, let's be happy, let's be grateful. Let's think about the right things, put that in there. Then books I would read, like I was getting into that like disciplinary, like, I don't know how to say it, like self-discovery mindset. So like Atomic Habits was such an iconic book. And I think it has been for everyone that has that like discipline. That again, just reassured me what I was doing with like 75 hard and how I was looking at the outlook of life was the right thing. And then I found out about Ryan Holiday. I read all his books and then it was like, okay, I'm reading like so many different books here that are all affirmations of the same thing. They all lead to the same result. And even though they're spoke by different people in different eras and different times by that have gone through all these different businesses or lives, they all kind of say the same thing. So if I can implement that same thing into me and it proves successful, then can I give that energy off through my personal pages and change other people's lives?
What is that thing? Is it simply discipline?
I think it is. I think discipline is like the root of success. I really do think it is.
Do you think discipline in and of itself is the root, or do you think discipline within the framework of a direction? Because you had the business, you had a vision for who you wanted to be, you were pointed towards that and discipline got you there. But if somebody's not pointed anywhere, would you give them different advice?
I think I would. I think that if someone has zero plan, zero future planned out for and ahead of them, they don't need to just implement discipline into their life. They don't need to go out and run 10K a day for 70 days or train twice and drink this much water and do this. I think they need to take the first little step, whether that's trying to figure out what it is that you want to do. What are you actually good at? Everyone's good at something, right? If you can leverage that one thing and make it become your life, eventually it will lead to success. And I'm sure everyone can be successful in a field of what they do. I don't know what the timelines are on that. It could be 50 years, it could be 10 years, it could be 1 year. You see like singers blow up after 6 months of singing. But you'll see a business person like me blow up after 12 years, or you'll see a businessman that sells cars and it'll take him 35 years. There's no timeline for it. It's just about taking that first step, whether that first step is reading a book, mental health, going for a run. Like, whatever that thing is, just give it a go. Just try it. See if you can stack it up. And if you enjoy it, keep going at it.
Specific example on this we discussed earlier was Machine Gun Kelly, who you've done collab stuff with in the past. And you were there in 2019 when he essentially had one of his best albums that didn't go where he hoped it would before the rise that's followed. And that's a great example of somebody who's been chipping away and away and away and away and away. And if you picked him up now, or you saw him on TikTok for the first time recently, and you
wouldn't realize that.
You wouldn't realize, would you?
He's had such like a long career. No one realized, like, he started rapping when I started my brand, and we kind of grew together at this same level for so long, and then both like exploded at the same time. But it's because he spent so long trying to figure out what his direction was and how he could do things and how he could target the masses, I guess. And like, everyone is different, right? Everyone's going to take different routes and go down different paths and fail and fail and try again and fail. And eventually it'll lead to success. And he is a good indicator of that. Like, if you even go down my Instagram, if you scroll down 3-4 years, it's not the same person. People will look at him and be like, whoa, what the fuck? That's not the same guy. Which is like, you can tell a story through images, right? Or video, YouTube, whatever it is. You can go back in time and see the actual come up of people, and it's completely different to what you see now.
And the reason I brought him up is because he's in a tier of celebrity now that people put on a pedestal, and they believe that they're not like the person that they believe themselves to be.
Yeah.
They're unattainable, that they've had advantages that they might not have. Whereas the core of what you've discussed there from a personal point of view and with him, and actually you've met some of the most famous people on the planet on a regular basis. And what's at the core of all that, as you've mentioned, is the fact that people just stick out what they're passionate about, implement the discipline along the way, and it'll figure itself out. Because passion is what's guiding you forwards. Discipline will almost help build the bridge as you go. But finding the thing that you're passionate about is what I think a lot of people are struggling with these days. And I'd love to hear your opinions on, specifically with younger men, because I think the way the internet is going, there's a lot of stuff out there at the moment that's telling you to do X, suggesting you do Y, encouraging you to consider things in a way in which 5 years ago, you wouldn't have been encouraged to do so. So based on the journey you've been on, the people you've met, the things that you've seen, lessons you've learned over the years, what would your advice be to young men in this day and age?
It's a difficult question because everything is perceived differently, right? But I noticed that, and I noticed that a 20-year-old kid can come on Instagram and look at these guys that own brands and look at their cars and look at their lifestyle that aren't much older than them and think, "That whoa, that'll never be me." But like, the difficulty is like that everything takes so long. People just need to realize that. Like, you can't just have everything at once. I think you can have anything, but you can't have everything. So it's like, to say to a young kid, like, oh, you need to go and find your passion is extremely difficult. Because for me, I already knew what I wanted to do all my life. Like, I wanted to make art. If I could then sell that, it was translating it to clothes. I figured that out at a young age. So I don't have a great opinion on someone who comes to me at 20 years old and says, how do I find my passion? It's a difficult question to answer.
It's something I think about a lot as well.
Like, do you answer to a kid that asks you that?
Look internally. Because I think back to when I was that age and suffering. It was because I was looking externally for things to guide me in the right direction, whilst simultaneously ignoring all of the things that I knew would actually make me happy. But I felt that the process of achieving the things that I thought I should be doing would make me happy because it was one step higher in the ladder.
Right.
But I think the ladder has changed since I felt like that. I think that the sort of more corporate traditional structure has been done away with a bit. And I think if you're really, really in on social media and you're seeing short form content promoting, join my Telegram group for Forex trading this so you can buy an Aventador, etc. All this stuff that's just rife at the moment. and the schemes that we know that go on behind all of it to allow people to present these lifestyles, it's almost presented this really fast-paced, fuck the ladder, figure it out yourself mentality, which I'm actually concerned that were I myself in my younger years now, I would have interacted with it even worse than I would have done then.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have put even more pressure on me.
And that's why it's hard to answer that question, because like everything is out there on your phone, on your laptop. Like you can see everything and what everyone's doing, and it's kind of like instant. Everything's short form, everything's instant. You can like, it's almost attainable to you, but it's not. It's so far away, but you can see that other people have it, so you think you can get it quick. I think really you've just got to actually listen to the right people, follow the right people. Like there is so many inspiring people out there. And if you have a bad group of friends or you don't have a friend group, like you can go on Instagram and you can follow the set right people that are doing things that you want to be doing in say 10, 15 years. And you can learn from them. You can listen to them on podcasts. You can watch them on YouTube. You can read their books. Like that's how you can understand that nothing's going to be instant. Nothing's going to be gratified straight away. Like there's a path to everything that's long form. You just got to accept that.
How important is being an uncle to you?
Pretty important actually. Yeah. Like, and I never thought I'd like want a child. And now my sister's Pearl is 2.5. Like I actually love her. Like she's my own child. Which is incredible. I love it. Yeah. I love being an uncle.
And there seems to be a business reflection of this as about 26 and a half hours from now, you'll be releasing the first round of kids stuff on there. Is that something you want to see develop for the child like, that you want in the future?
I've kind of realized that even going back to just what we were saying then, like everything's so short form and quick and you can change anything. Like with Represent, I can do what I want. Like if something doesn't work, it doesn't work, move on. Nobody actually cares because everything's so fast. And I thought, I'll make Pearl some little samples last year. And then I put it on Instagram and it just absolutely blew up. And then I realized that, okay, everyone around my age is kind of having kids now. Like my sister's having kids. James is having kids in the business. There's like babies popping up everywhere. Let's just see if like...
You're back to your roots, aren't you? You're selling t-shirts to your mates and your friends of your friends.
Yeah. The Instagram post blew up. So I was like, should we just make these, James? And he was like, yeah, let's try it. Long story short, 9 months later, it's coming out. We're trying it.
How do you think it'll land?
I don't know. According to the reaction through Instagram, it should do phenomenal. But I've never sold kids' clothes before. And who's to say the reaction on Instagram relates to sales? Most of the time it does with the brand, but that's because my customers are buying it. Whereas my customers aren't necessarily buying this unless they have a child or someone in the family that's that young. And I only wanted to do age 1 to 4 because I don't want to do kids' clothes. I don't want to do 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I don't want like the average represent customer to be walking down the street and see a young 12-year-old in the same clothes as him. I want it to be their family, their children.
Yeah. Makes for good studio pictures, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So
that was a hard graft, actually.
With all that in mind, given you're so value-driven, given you're so purpose-driven, given you've held yourself accountable to so many things, and you're really thinking towards the future now from a business and a personal point of view, what sort of father, hypothetically speaking, do you want to be? And what are the values that you're really going to hold close to you?
I want to be like my dad was to me. Like he taught me how to nurture grit, how to practice discipline, how to work hard, and like how real the world is and how fake other people are. Like he taught me all that stuff when I was like young and I didn't realize that was happening. Because you don't when you're a kid. You just listen to him and think, what's he going on about? Oh, why is he making me do this? Oh, why am I stood power hose in a minibus on a Wednesday night? Like he taught me all those things, whether he knew it or not, for like a really good reason. And I'll be the exact same with my children.
With that as the core, what does a day-to-day look like from a habits point of view? Because I can imagine your DMs are peppered with several things, but mostly, bro, What trainers are those? Bro, what's your morning routine? Bro, what's your recovery protocol? What's your morning routine?
What is the day today? Full day?
Full day, let's do it. Full day.
I'll wake up usually around 10 to 5. All right? Quarter to 5, 10 to 5, 5 to 5, whichever one of them 5-minute slots is right for when I go to bed. And before we carry on with the day, I go to bed 8 hours before that. I'm not one of them guys that will do 4 hours sleep or 5 hours sleep. Like, I make sure I'm in bed 8 hours before I wake up.
We say, having both done that today.
Yeah. Well, when there's an important task at hand, then I'll change how that is. But most of the time, 8 hours sleep, wake up just before five. I will do the usual. Take a poo. Have a shower. Brush my teeth.
You that routine, that clockwork, up and at them.
Yeah, straight up.
I'm very jealous. Head
downstairs. I'll make a coffee. I'll either have a banana or a squares bar or both if I'm quite hungry.
That riles people up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's again, one of the fucking main questions. I'll have a cordyceps. Feel like it helps my endurance.
That bounces out the squares bar. That'll keep the people that are riled up happy, won't it?
Yeah. I was training at my own gym, but now we've got a HQ gym. So I'll get there for around 5:40. Girls' classes start at 6. So I'll open up, get everything ready, get the music on. I'll do a bit of cardio at the moment whilst them classes are on. Next class is the guys' class, which is at 7. And I'll join in on that because I want to build this environment and I want the people in my workforce to kind of go through what I've been through. Because I feel like that whole aspect of like building your physical also massively helps your mental and massively helps you in work. It's all correlated. All them three things, business, mindset, physical, like all them things together, if they can arise together, it's fucking fantastic. You don't want to build one of them to such height and leave the other one in the grave and then have to try and build it at a later stage. So yeah. So 7 a.m. the guys' classes start, 8 a.m. it finishes, quick shower. I'll usually order a Starbucks for my breakfast.
What's your order?
4 egg bites, sometimes a porridge, and usually just like an iced Americano, a little bit of vanilla in it.
No, you just lied to me. What is it specifically? Because I'm going to throw myself in with it. It's sugar-free vanilla, George.
Yeah, sugar-free vanilla.
Which always makes me cringe when apologies. I have to say it. So I'm dragging you down with me. Because when I go, can I get a venti, skinny, sugar-free caramel latte, please? And there's always some man driving a transit van that tuts at me. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
He just walks in and just coffee.
So I just wanted to make clear that we have the same order and go through the same process there. But from there, what does a work day look like? Because
so 8 a.m. work usually starts. Most people get in between 8 and 9 that aren't in the classes. I'll spend about an hour before 9 a.m. where I can just get through all my emails, get through all my DMs, go on the represent accounts, make sure they're all okay, everything's going good. 9 a.m. till 10:30 on a Monday is always with the board, with the team, just figuring out what we've got to do for that week. Then I'll go down to the like design area and we will just discuss product. Product will be like my main focus until midday. I'll eat lunch at 12 every day. Same thing, which is 2 packs of chicken barbecue from M&S, a pack of cabbage that goes in the microwave, a little bit of chili sauce on it. Sometimes I'll have a bit extra if I need some more carbs, but that's literally the usual thing. I'll either walk to M&S or I'll just drive there if it's inconvenient because I've got a lot to do. Just get that down me. 10-minute walk always after that lunch and sit back down, and usually like afternoons are either fittings or design reviews. So I use myself as a fit model and we'll go through how necklines fit, how everything is on a garment. Usually that's like 2-3 times a week. Monday afternoons get quite hectic with that. Work usually finishes like 5:30, 6 p.m. Most people are out of the building by 6. Either me, Steph or Mike will usually lock up, go home. I'm so hungry by then. All I can think about is food. Nothing else but food. So it's like, I'll cook a steak, put some veg with that. I'll either catch up on the guys that I watch on YouTube or I'll listen to a podcast. Again, I go for a little walk most nights, especially now because it's summer. And because I'm doing like the classes in the morning, I'm not exerting myself as much as I should be. So sometimes I'll train later as well. Turn the sauna on, turn the ice bath on, watch a few podcasts, whatever I'm doing, check through my Instagram, reply to everyone who's commented through the day, because I usually do that morning then at that time, which is like 7 p.m. Hit the sauna, hit the ice bath, hit the bed. Nothing more.
I see a twist of thread there. And that's the standards, isn't it?
I guess, yeah, that's my standards.
Does it change when you travel?
It does slightly. It depends what the schedule is. Like if we're in LA and we've got to do training plans and I've got to train with two different influencers and we then got to go out at night because we're doing a meal with this guy or we're going to this club, I'll drink, I'll do whatever. Like I'm not complete, like regimented like that. Like, okay, I eat most of the same things every day and I do the same stuff most days, but I like to get out of it. Like I said earlier, every 2 weeks I'm away. And yeah, that is for business, but it's also for myself. Like I don't like getting stuck in the same routine over and over. It gets boring, for one. And number two, I'm not learning. I'm not seeing things. I'm not in other places. I'm not experiencing things. And I need that to actually be creative.
I think that's quite an unconventional approach to things because a lot of the morning routine discussions online are very dogmatic.
Yeah.
You should do this all the time. This is how you should exist. Whereas you can turn it on and off. The standards there, obviously, they don't deviate, but you can turn it on and off without any sense of feeling like you've let yourself down or like yeah. You've made a mistake. Has that always been the case?
No, for a very long time, I thought that you had to do everything the same. And I was stuck in that phase for like probably a year, maybe more, of just doing the exact same thing, not wanting to go out, not wanting to do other things. It was just bang, 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 get it done. But like, if you want to be creative and you want to meet people and you want to expand like your own knowledge, like you can't just do that sat in your house. You can read as many books as you want. They all tell you the same thing and you can listen to as many podcasts as you want and they'll all say the same thing. But like as a person, you need to be out there in the world. You need to be going doing different things. You got to even scare yourself, right? Going on a podcast like scares me. I get nervous doing things like that. That's something that's completely out of my routine. Like today's out of my routine. We slept for what, 4 hours last night?
Yeah, 3:48 according to my Whoop.
3:48.
So unconventional for me as well. I mean, what's mental is that this has come at probably the busiest week of my year so far.
On a random Tuesday,
yeah. I mean, the Sunday to Sunday cycle I've got this week, I was intimidated by. Genuinely actually worried that I wouldn't be able to do it, that I wouldn't be able to sit here and switch my brain on.
Right.
But what's mad is it's been so chaotic. But I feel more energized day to day because everything I'm doing this week is exciting and moving things forwards and it's with cool people in different places. And there's a routine that underpins it. But over the years, I've got more and more comfortable with the fact that because I've said I'm going to do something, that can be the standard, the constant, but life isn't constant, is it? So you can't punish yourself when you can't replicate something that was set up for one set of circumstances in different circumstances.
Yeah. And look, you can change and adapt. You can go back to that routine. And if it's going to change your body composition or your strength or whatever it is that you're focusing on, you can get back there in a couple of weeks anyway. Like when you mentioned about traveling, like I'll go to LA, I'll drink, I'll party, I'll do a lot of stuff that I wouldn't conventionally do at home, but I'll gain so much from it. I'll meet so many different people. Collaborations can happen. I can work on Machine Gun Kelly's next album merch. Like these things don't happen when you're sat in your fucking office staring at a wall doing the same thing day in, day out.
Do you have total trust in the team behind you for you to go off and do those things?
I do now, and that's why I do them. That's why I'm sat here today, because I know that the engine is oiled and that there's people in positions that will not let things happen that I wouldn't let happen but usually would. So I've got like an amazing team. I know you mentioned about the CEO and I forgot to answer earlier. But yeah, I've got people in place that are doing the right things for the business, which allows me this time where I can come and spend time with you. I can learn from you. We can get some hard workouts in. We can do like what I actually love doing.
How difficult was it from an ego point of view to let go of that control? Because CEO, if we're going back to Twitter threads, is a popular phrase. And it's something people attach a lot of ego to.
Yeah.
And it's something that's done to death in so many different ways and different social media. I've kind of, the term's become a bit grey in terms of what actually means, what are the criteria, but you very much were the CEO of a business that was turning over enough to hit the criteria, has enough people to hit the criteria. Yeah. So you could legitimately call yourself that, which comes with some status in society. People want to be in that position. And
yeah, but like,
you've had control for so long.
What is it? It's a word.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of letters. If you ever go on my social medias, you'll never see I've ever called myself a CEO. Like, I don't care. I don't care literally what anyone's titles is, whether at the bottom of the business or the top of the business or they own the business. I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. As long as you're doing what you should be doing and you're doing it at a high level, that's fantastic. I don't need to be the CEO of my brand. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I have no ego attached to it.
Is there ego attached to the control that you let go with the responsibilities?
At first it was hard. It was difficult. Not really ego, but just like control of like money and like what actual decisions are getting made. But like, that person is in that place to drive the business. His incentives are through driving the business. And if he makes me happy, like, I'm going to make him happy. Like, we're in this together. We're all in the same boat, right? Whoever's fucking steering it, it doesn't matter, as long as we're steering in the right direction and we're all focused on what we want to gain out of it.
From a fitness point of view, what does a typical week look like in terms of methodology and approach? Because I know you're all over the place in terms of classes and things here, but I'm very structured and have a lot of intent behind every session. And that's for specific outcomes. Whereas you're quite different, aren't you? So is there even such a thing as a typical week of training for you? Or is it more you want to move your body and reap the rewards of that to underpin the commercial side of what you're doing?
I think for the first few years of like running and getting into CrossFit, there was no exact goals that I ever wanted to do. I didn't want to compete. Like, I found that frightening. Then I found out about HYROX and I was like, okay, I'll try that. Then Jake, who is no coach at Represent, he's been a coach at Hybrid, like, he put me together a 6-week HYROX plan leading up to the London HYROX, which I stuck to. And that's the first plan I've ever stuck to. Like, I've never believed in plans. I just make my own workouts up. I like looking at CrossFit workouts. I like looking at hybrid workouts. I like looking at running workouts. I like looking at track workouts and just make my week up. And that's what I put on the 247 app. It's just what I do with no specific end goals in mind. But he gave me this HYROX plan that I stuck to. And it shaved like 4 minutes off my time. So that kind of like proved to me that, okay, things can work if you actually like do them. And I know you're fully invested in that, but I've never needed to care that much.
But the flip side is, for me, it can go the other way, where I then go through periods of craving randomization.
Right.
Because
you're so stuck on one thing.
Yeah.
And I feel that as well when I'm doing it. When I wake up and I've got a program from someone else that's telling me to do 500 wall balls with sprints in between. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do that, but I've got to do that. So yeah, I know what you mean. And there's always that, like, when you've done a hard challenge, the backlog from that of getting back to the point where you really want to do it or you want to do something as hard again. It's so strange, that like mental feeling of coming out of something that you've done really well at or you've succeeded in. Like, no one really talks about what comes after that.
We spoke a bit on camera earlier in the hills about how the typical business owner collection of letters, CEO, traditionally has looked a certain way, has almost been a bit of a caricature of what we used was an overweight American man smoking. Yeah, the boss. Yeah. I'm seeing Kingpin from the Spider-Man.
Right.
that's what I'm seeing at the moment, him. That's changed. And it's athletes that are running big businesses, or vice versa. It's big business owners that are almost becoming athletes. They're doing big events. They're committing to things that seemingly shouldn't fit with their schedule. And that circles right back to what you think is the thread of DNA that runs through everything that everybody you've interacted with does, which is the core buzzword of discipline. The people you meet on a day-to-day basis that are in the business circles that you moved in the modern world, are they all following a similar structure to you in terms of the key components of a day? Are they all training? Are they all focusing on recovery protocols? Are they all having specific times of the day that they do specific tasks?
Yeah.
And following that same pattern?
Yeah. More recently, the guys that I meet, they're all doing the same thing. Like, I've become really good friends with a guy called Ross You might actually know Ross McKay. Scottish bloke. Lives in LA.
Normally that actually goes a long way when you say, oh, he's from Scotland.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, it's a big country, but then you say the name and it's like, oh yeah, I do know him.
But we own completely different businesses, but we're like identical in the way we are. And like I meet him in LA, but he's from Scotland and I'm from the north of England and we're like best mates now.
And you can just merge and sync on a day-to-day basis.
The exact same like lifestyle. And there's so many of people like him, especially in areas like LA and New York and that are doing the same thing. I feel like it is a big thing. Obviously, there's Twitter circles where everyone's posting what they're doing. And yeah, I think like the new modern CEO is, they're competitive in business. So they're going to be competitive in sports if they can get into it. And obviously, if you're a competitive person in business, you're going to do that. Like the CEO of Flannels comes and does the Hyrox with me. He's like, oh, we're at the start line. He's like, I'm going to beat you. He's like, I fucking love that.
That's class.
Oh, you're not. Next time. It's fucking amazing.
Did you get him? Did you get him last time? Yeah, good. Okay, just checking. Because that would have been an unfortunate end to that story.
Yeah. But like I feel like that competitive nature that you have in business, you can transfer to your physical. And like I said before about my staff, why I've put that gym in that office, which I don't need to do. Like I don't need to try and motivate everyone.
6,000 square feet, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which could be so much other stuff from a business critical point of view, couldn't it?
It could even be a real gym where people can come train, but it's not. It's for the people inside my business because I want them. There was this image that I had in my head and I can never find it online. And I've seen it years ago. And it was three people stood looking out of a window and they were stood on books. And one pile of the books was short, one was really long, and one had like one book there, three different people. And it ended up being the same person, but like the half stacked books was physical, the full stacked books was mental, and the one stacked book was business. And it's like, what's wrong here? That guy can't see out the window in business. The guy can see out the window in physical, but he can't see out of it in mental. Like if you can bring all of them up to the same thing at the same time and you can do, your life can be like aligned in them three different areas. Like that's mental clarity. That's how you're going to get to places, right?
Yeah.
Look at yourself. Physical is up here. Now your business is up here as well. You're mentally doing things that are, again, going to make it up here. The podcast, everything you're doing, you're learning from other people. Like if you can implement them three things into the structure of your life and bring them all up together, it's amazing.
I call the main components of my life pillars for that exact same
there
reason.
You go. Yeah.
So in
easier way of explaining it.
Because they prop things up. Yeah. There we go. I think I've actually seen the photo that you're talking about. And it's like a drawing almost, isn't it? Yeah, I think I've seen it at some point. And yeah, I did a talk on Sunday where I use this example and I use pillars because if one of them's cracking, everything's at risk of falling down.
Yeah.
But you can sort of, I don't know the technical term, you can fill it in with cork, something, filler. We'll go with filler.
Yeah.
and keep the pillar propping everything else up. And for me, that's kind of my relationships, my business and my training. Those are the big three. And if one slips, the others slip. And I can quickly find myself in a pretty aggressive downward spiral where I suddenly lose control of everything. And what I really struggled with last year when training for the Double Brutal was I found myself in that spiral. And I wasn't, all three almost fell down at the same time. And I became so frustrated with the fact that things that I normally enjoy, all of a sudden I wasn't enjoying or excited about anymore.
Why do you think that was?
It's just because I think I let the things that were staring me in the face that were difficult to solve the problem and find solutions to in the short term, build and build and build and build to the point where what I feared would happen if I let them continue to almost collapse. So it's things like this training load is difficult unless you find an assistant who can manage your diary and bookings and all these things. And I kind of knew that'd be the case, but I don't have the time to sit and go through all these applications and all this. So I'll put that to the side for the time being. But I'd isolated what the solution was and then hadn't fulfilled on the action in the middle that got me to the solution. And in the time that it took for that to happen, the training load became too much. And then I started to get a bit irritable with Erin. I started to not enjoy dog walks. I caught myself at points. I was doing the Johnny Walker experience which is like a world class, to be fair. It's amazing. A whiskey tour in the corner of Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And I was with friends that had come up for London for the weekend. And I caught myself just doing sums on my phone because I knew how many tours were available to book during the day. I knew how many people were in the room. I knew how much the tour cost. So I was just doing maths on what's the turnover of the day. I wonder how much these people have been paid. Just because I was so locked in to the only time I had was in training or in the businesses that I had no way of separating myself out from that. And as soon as I found myself in that position, everything had fallen down. I sort of had to rebuild the pillars slowly. Right. And that only came after the double because I got to the start line. I was very proud that I did because the circumstances were tough. I made it worse for myself though. And the lessons I learned along the way from a business and a personal point of view that now make my life easier mean that I'm much more aware of what pillars could crack and bring things down with them.
Isn't that what's great about it though, that you can go through them things and then become aware and realize, and you'll go through them a million times in life, but it'll still happen like all the time. There's always going to be cracks in the pillars. But as long as you're aware of it and as long as you're reacting to it and doing the right thing to it, then the old pillars are going to rise.
100%. Have you had any moments in the past couple of years where you felt like the wall's crumbling down, the ceiling's coming down with you? Because I've seen a story a while ago. You had a question where somebody was asking about what your take on modern mental health in the modern world was or something like that. And you were saying, unfortunately, you've never really suffered with a downturn in it much because you're so passion-led, you've got a great team around you, you've got all these people. But when the challenges come along, when your back's up against the wall, when you're faced with the passion-led decisions in the business where you're thinking, oh, what do I do here? Have you found yourself in situations where you felt in that tailspin that I described? Or
Do you know what? No, not really. In the past few years, no, because I've got a good team that can reassure decisions that we make. Especially in business, like it's a brand that's growing and like there is perennial product in there and there is ways we can do different things. And like I said earlier about the kids stuff, like I can chop and change and do different things all the time. There's like, there's so much opportunity in the business that I'm not really worried if something not like happens that's going to affect it because we can change. We can always like pivot. We can always optimize something else. I feel like we're only just at the surface in the business where like there's so much opportunity for us that even if something comes down, we can bring something else up.
Do you think living with Mike has mimicked some of the things that I get from my partner and Erin from a household point of view? Do you think if you were living on your own, you'd feel as comfortable in your own presence to have the routines that you do, to feel as comfortable in your own head? Because obviously you've read a lot of Ryan Holiday, you've got all these things, you've got all this information. But when push comes to shove and you've had a long day, your head's been in certain things and you sat there on your own, you haven't really been in that situation because you live with your brother. He's moving on with his missus, isn't he?
Maybe
there's two questions here, which is, do you think he's propped you up along the way by sort of fulfilling that real supportive, we've got each other's backs role in a household personal life point of view? And how do you think you'll defend when he's gone?
That's a weird question. I will never unleash all my feelings and stuff like that on Mike, whether it's business or whatever it is, personal. Like, I'll talk to him over things. And like, it's hard to say because we live like different lives. Like, I'm an early guy. I wake up. I'm out of the house before he's awake. And he only gets in from work by the time I've gone to bed. So we don't actually communicate that much in the home environment. Whereas in work, we do communicate a lot because we're both in the design team. But like when I've got, I know that putting pressure on Mike isn't the right thing to do. And if I can lead by example with training and lifestyle and the way to run a business, that's great. And Mike can lead by example in different areas where he is because we're so different people. Then I'm happy with that. I'll never, like, I respect him so much that I would never like put a lot of pressure on him with how I'm feeling about anything. And it's probably a bad thing, but I'm a very closed person. If I'm feeling a lot of stress, or I'm not going to say anxiety because I don't get anxiety, but if I'm feeling stress or I'm not liking the way something is, it's not usually Mike that I'll go to about that. It'll be my CEO, or it'll be James, or it'll be Steph. But you know what I actually prefer to do rather than like let things out on people and affect how they feel. I prefer to just use my notes and write everything down. And I'll every weekend I'll write down how I felt like the week went. And like, then I'll analyze it, and then maybe I'll send it to James and see what he feels about it. And then I'll get a bit of like clarity from, okay, no, that wasn't actually the case. And this happened. And there's like, the dynamic with me and Mike isn't like that.
Balance though, isn't it? You bring out the best in each other.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I couldn't live with anyone else. And like the way I am and the way he is, it's just like perfect together, because we have no egos against each other. Like, there is absolutely no fighting, no squabbling. There's no decision making that I don't believe is right or he doesn't believe is right. Like, we have the same vision. We have the same outlook. We have the same goals. Like, we love the same things. We do the same stuff. Like, we when I make a decision, he knows it's right. When he makes a decision, I know it's right.
He's moving out soon, which means the future is coming, and the future is coming for Rep as well, because there's a lot on, isn't there?
There's a lot on always.
there's a drop every week, yeah. It seems, but
there is.
is it every week or is
nearly
it,
every week?
Nearly every week. Yeah.
I'm trying to make it every week, but there's a few weeks where we don't need to. When there's a huge collection, we let it have a taper off and stuff. Yeah.
But future, you've had to recently reveal finances to the world for the first time, which I know is something you've been you've kept very close for a long time. Is it something you're going to lean into more from a business personality point of view, or do you just want to let the business speak for itself when it comes to the numbers? Because they're obviously detached from you as an individual, but with releasing the numbers, people will now be able to attach predictions, speculation, net worth, if you search George Heaton, all of these things that I assume you've done a good job of avoiding over the years. So with the finances revealed, with the growth of the company as it is, what does the long term look like? What is you sitting down with your notepad, looking at 5 years you in the future, as you did when you were in 2019, who's the guy in the future?
That same guy that I drew then. But like, there is so much more to go at. And every time we get to these pillars or these points where we always wanted to get to, then there's obviously more. Like, the horizon's ever changing, isn't it? Same with everyone. Like, you get to places that you thought you could never get to, and then you expand on them. I think like, I'll always rather the product speak for itself, and I don't care about numbers or titles. And then I don't ever want to see, well, I'm not going to say I don't ever want to see, but I don't need to see my name on like rich lists and stuff like that. Like, I don't care. Like, I care that my business is great. Everyone inside the business is great. My family is great. And I'm living the exact way I want to live. They're what I define as success, not a release of numbers or who's chief of this or that, or what this guy's worth. Doesn't matter to me.
A success and happiness, one and the same to you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think they're married.
Is that the same for the team around you? Do you think everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet?
I hope so. I think it's like a maturity and a development thing when you realize that like what success and happiness is, and if there are something that is together in life, which I do think they are.
Yeah, no, I agree. And what's made me most unhappy in the past is a definition of success that was being externally determined or at the very least influenced. So the example, when I was at my worst, 2014 to 2016, mental health, depression that was getting progressively worse, ultimately led to a suicide attempt.
This in university.
Yeah. So joined in 2014, October 2014. About 2 weeks later, I didn't feel like I belonged, and I felt like uni was too slow. And we've already laughed about this a bit earlier, that at school, teachers told my parents the real world does not match the intensity with which Fergus is existing. And they thought, oh, okay, yeah, he's working hard. He'll enjoy uni and all this stuff. But not saying they should have taken that seriously, but looking back, it's obvious how it could happen, because I discovered self-driven health and fitness, which made me see this really black and white way of improving myself on a day-to-day basis. And I thought, oh, wow, hard work put in equals outputs. If I apply myself in the same way with my exams, I might be able to actually go to the universities that I've heard of people talking about that could be amazing. So all of my existence became focused on trying to get into Oxford.
Right.
Didn't get past the interview stage, didn't get a place. That hurt. Ended up going to Durham, the graveyard. Also hurt. and went full of ambition, full of hope, wanted to make the most of it, going to a great university, let's go. And I just arrived and it was just slow, slow paced, a lot of pissing around, a lot of stuff that wasn't moving me forwards. And I'd set a plan before I got to uni on what the future looked like that was based on these external factors of best grades possible, best job possible, best promotion possible, best car possible, best house possible, best holidays possible, best retirement holidays, and then you're dead. And I'd map the whole thing out.
And then you're dead.
And it balances out as foolish because I was just basing my future plan on what I thought the right thing to do within the circumstances that I had available to me. I didn't think about what I was actually driven by or passionate about. And the answer at the time was fucking obvious. I'd gone from 102 kilos, a good rugby player due to physics, not necessarily rugby skill, to sub 80 kilos because I just became absolutely obsessed with health and fitness. I sort of went and did a personal training qualification when I was 17, 18, sort of did it throughout that period just so I could get keys to the school gym so I could train at 5 a.m.
Yeah,
I was reading every morning. I was doing all the things that I now talk about on podcasts with people before I'd had any external influence. Discovered that and then tried to place myself into like this mold that society and the people around me sort of had presented to me. And Edinburgh is very white collar, generally speaking. It's very corporate, and that's great, I think, in many ways because there's loads of stability. Yeah. But I didn't really ever conceive of going a different path because I had good grades and I could see a roadmap forward, but that's because it was the easy roadmap.
Yeah.
And then when I got to uni, that plan went out the window. But because it's the plan I said I was going to do, I was going to fucking stick to it. And then every day I felt like a failure more and more and more and more and more because I wasn't operating in the way I thought I should be to move myself towards the plan that actually no longer made sense. So I was just punishing myself for no reason when the simple thing to do would have been, right, what are the current circumstances? Things have changed. How do we move forwards from here? But I never had that conversation. I didn't have that conversation with myself until 2018 when I'd actually come out of the back end of recovering from depression and a suicide attempt and found myself slipping back into it when I was discontented with the work I was doing in London. But the work I was doing in London, I took the first job that came up as a grad scheme because everybody was doing grad schemes in London.
Yeah.
Not because I wanted to go and work for Heineken in London and get steaming 3-4 times a week. It was because it was a grad scheme. Here's a grad scheme, Fergus. Yeah, take it.
Go and do it.
It wasn't, what would I like to do? How can I make the most of it? What is going to make me intrinsically happy? It was, what does success look like? And then in your own time, you can focus on happiness. Whereas now, they're one and the same. Like, just completely one and the same to me.
And, like, do you think that's the way you should look at life from a younger age? Like, what was the catalyst that made you then change that? Was it the amount of depression you got? Or was it you realized, oh, I like changing my body. I like looking at nutrition. I like looking at all this stuff, different stuff. Like, what was the actual, like, catalyst for that change?
It was finding something that I enjoyed that I could see results in.
So then going back to the question you asked me about the younger guy, what do you tell him? Is that what we tell him?
So me specifically, I can be more specific here because it's me. So I know this person. I've got the context. I'd essentially say to look a little bit deeper on what things you wake up in the morning excited about.
Yeah.
And to lean more into them because I could translate that excitement into the future. So I enjoyed elements of school, but I enjoyed the process of seeing the metrics tick up towards the hypothetical result I was going to get that was going to get me the thing that I thought I should be getting.
Right.
Not because I was enjoying the actual thing itself. Yeah. What I was enjoying was training at 5 a.m, was bringing my mates along with me, was watching Max Tuning and Rob Lipsett in my room late at night, all that stuff.
But you can apply that to any industry and anything that anyone is interested in who's listening to this. Like, it doesn't have to be training specific, does it?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, people might wake up excited about arts and crafts. They might wake up excited about gardening. It doesn't matter what it is. But if you feel that excitement, lean the fuck into it. That's what I would have told myself. I would have shaken myself and said, don't follow this path that's laid out for you.
Yeah.
Follow the path that you can still follow the path, but you can look
do other
around
things as well. Find out something else. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be as binary as...
But maybe going down that wrong path is what leads you to the right path.
Well, because I wouldn't change anything.
Down, exactly. Because you go down it so far that you realize, no, I'm not fucking doing that. And it's just having that ability to then change after you've realized that you don't want to do it.
It's exactly that. And it sounds strange to say, I feel fortunate to have survived a suicide attempt, but that's who I am. That's something I will happily discuss with anyone I meet anywhere and everywhere, because it's just a part of who I am. And it's something I'm open to discussing and comfortable with. But the bottom line is, it's made me who I am right now. And who I am right now is happy, content, and moving in a direction that I'm very pleased with. And I'm only moving in a direction that I'm very pleased with because of everything that's come before me. So I think that's the thing. But what I really struggle with, and I can imagine you do the same, is the fast-pacedness of everything means that it's difficult to look back at the person you were 3 years ago, or the teenager
right. That
would be jaw hitting the floor wondering what 12 years from now would look like. And that's what I want to get better at from a personal point of view. So from a day-to-day side of things, do you make time to actually be present and proud of what you've created? Because you've created a community. You used the word community earlier, which again, it has connotations on Twitter, on Reddit, et cetera, et cetera. It's a marketing term in many ways now. But you've created a community globally. You've done some of the coolest shit with some of the coolest people in the world.
Yeah.
There's now a fitness derivative of it. So you've got high fashion, you've got runway stuff historically, and now you've got a completely different market. I mean, you've got a range that covers pretty much everyone. And there's more development to come. Do you wake up every morning excited and proud, most importantly? Because it's crazy.
I do. I wake up every morning. I'm grateful for the position I'm in. I'm extremely happy. I'm so excited. Like, the reason I can wake up and train so hard and work all day and not flag and not fall asleep is because I'm so excited. Like, I'm building this brand, which is changing people's lives inside the business, and the customers that are coming to us or watching our YouTube or whatever it is, that are getting inspired by it, or they're changing their lives with the way their body is, or just through fashion and through what I've done telling my story, that they can then go and do it themselves. Going back to that, like, younger version, like, the only reason I put this YouTube out is for a documentation of what we've done. Because when I was that 18-year-old kid, I didn't have a blueprint. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have anything. If you look at my Instagram now as an 18-year-old kid, you don't see flash cars and all this stuff that I could be flaunting and private jets. You see a link to a YouTube channel that shows exactly what we do, exactly how we do it, how hard we work, what we actually talk about, what we go and do. And, like, for me to put that out there to the younger George, like that kid that was starting, would mean a fucking million.
What would you say to him?
What would I say to the 19-year-old kid that's just starting represent? Then, man, it's going to be a journey, but it's going to be a good one.
That's it. And everybody has access to that, because it all comes down to you just taking one decision to tell your dad, I'm not going to work for you.
Literally.
And here we are. 80 million turnover incoming, people all around the world, a big attack on America, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
Biden, just to confirm, don't flag this, thank you. In terms of that market and then the rest of the world to come, what are you most excited about the next couple of years?
I wake up every morning and I'm excited because I will check my DMs and I'll be like, this is fucking incredible. Everyone loves the product. Everyone loves the customer service. Everyone loves what's going on with the business. Like, I'm excited for every single day. I'm not necessarily excited for 3 years' time we'll be doing this, or we're going to hit this target in 2026. That doesn't matter to me. As long as I wake up, I'm happy. I love my day. Like, I get home, I spend 5-10 minutes just thinking, how good was today? Were we happy? Did we win the day? Did we have a successful day? Like, is everyone happy in the business? Did we succeed with everything we did? It's not always great. Like, it's not always going to be a phenomenal launch night. It's not always going to be everyone's happy about everything. There's always going to be little things, but as long as you can keep optimistic and be grateful for it and just be happy, like, there's no reason not to be.
One step forwards, one risk at a time. That's all the brand's been built on. And it's gone from strength to strength. And I think that's a message that's translatable to everybody listening. Yeah. One step forwards is the key. It's whenever I am in the position you're in, whenever I'm speaking to anyone, it all comes down to one moment I remember when I just thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to figure this out and take. I'm not going to do the thing tomorrow, but I'm going to start the process of the thing.
Yeah, just put it into your mental space. Like, think about it.
Yeah.
If it's in your mind, you're going to eventually come to it, aren't you?
Yeah. And it's mad how much can happen just by making it up as you go along. Because I'm firmly of the opinion that absolutely everybody is making it up as they go along.
I'm making it up as I go along, and I know billionaires that are making it up as they go along. So you can also make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
Everybody is making it up as they go along.
Build the wings as you fly. Well, mate, I've really enjoyed that. I've really enjoyed today. It's been fantastic to get you up finally, and we've got the day. Maybe you are putting a good word with those billionaires. They've spoken to the guy upstairs to give us the best weather I've ever had in Edinburgh.
Yeah,
Johnny will be absolutely furious that he was not in the Pantheon this morning.
But I've had a beautiful day. It's been fantastic. Like, I love being able to do these things with like-minded people, have great conversations, and just enjoy it.
No, I really appreciate it, and I'm excited to see what's to come. But every day's excitement is the focus, isn't it? That should be the goal. And I've learned a lot today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Huge episode, huge conversation, and a huge thank you to George for making the trip up to sit down with me and talk things through. And a huge thank you to you that are still here at this point in the podcast. I massively appreciate all of you as well. And if you wouldn't mind, just a reminder to please do all of the podcasty things, hit follow or subscribe, share this episode with a friend, rate and review, check us out on YouTube, etc., etc. It would put a smile on my face. Thank you very much. As well as this, I would love it if you do engage with the show sponsors. All information is in the show notes down below, alongside all links to YouTube, mailing list, George's socials, etc., etc. So a final thank you from me for still being here at this point. I appreciate you all. Have a good rest of your day.